Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. This episode explores the third trimester of pregnancy.
A lot about birth prep and all about birthing your baby is about unlearning. It's about, you know, we've been fed all of these negative stories. So actually, I'm just going to come back to a space of my body knows what to do.
Pregnancy and birth educator Kitty Hackle, who goes by the Instagram handle Birth Baby Beyond, offers practical, empowering advice on the third trimester in this episode, including preparing yourself as best you can for childbirth. And I started the chat by asking her to tell us a little bit about herself.
So I am a registered general nurse. I'm a birth and postpartum doula. I'm also a lactation consultant, hypnobirthing educator, and antenatal instructor. So a bit of everything, And I'm currently smack bang in the middle of it all. So I have just given birth to my second little boy. So I've got Atticus, who's 2.5. I've got Archer, who is, oh my gosh, just gone 9 weeks. And I'm bonus mama to Jess as well. So we've got a nice little mixture of a family.
So, I mean, you have the professional experience and then you have the real life experience, which is fantastic. Because we want these episodes to be as practical and as reassuring for the listener as possible. I'm kind of imagining these as what I would have loved to have heard when I was pregnant for the first time.
Yeah.
So let's start by talking about all the symptoms, I suppose, that you can experience in the third trimester. We left the last episode at the end of the second trimester. So
perfect.
As bump grows, sometimes the symptoms can increase or you can have new ones presenting themselves.
Sure. I think that sort of final leg of pregnancy is both so exciting because it all gets a little bit more real, doesn't it? It's like, oh yeah, those things that were once far off are like, oh right, like, so this is, I'm going to have to push this baby out now. This is all getting a little bit real.
Yeah.
But also, you know, the energy that maybe you had in the second trimester is maybe waning a little bit. Although, you know, I think sometimes you get those little bursts of energy to go and paint the entire outside of your house as I did, which was really ridiculous.
Good old nesting.
Oh my gosh, ridiculous. And you get these silly ideas and then the next minute you're floored. And as well as that, just the weight of the gravid uterus, the weight of those hormones that are surging through your body, preparing you and doing all of these really magical things, that sort of cocktail of hormones. And you're just trying to get on with things. You're trying to get on with everyday life and trying to squeeze in the preparation for birth, both mentally, physically, emotionally, and just wrapping your head around the whole thing.
Yeah.
It depends as well, body to body. I think some people really love that, you know, the excitement, that final burst and feel really good. And then other women are going, oh my gosh, this baby could not come sooner. I've got hemorrhoids. I've got swollen feet. I'm, you know, sweating from parts of my body I didn't realize could sweat. And, you know, I'm one minute I'm in love with the world and the next minute I'm screaming from the rooftops. So it's, I suppose, just a little bit about just think sitting back if you can and going, yeah, this is all part of the process.
Yeah.
And doing the things that can, I suppose, move you away from those feelings of uncertainty and maybe fear and more towards a feeling of confidence around meeting your baby.
I'm really glad you said that because I suppose I'm in it right now because I'm 30
so
weeks.
In it.
Yeah. And I really feel like we forget a lot of our experiences. Maybe we're biologically designed to do that, I'm not sure. But I was very fortunate that I kept a very comprehensive pregnancy diary first time around. So I've been reading back over that and reminding myself of all of the...
This is where I was at this time last pregnancy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How I was feeling.
What comes next?
What comes next? Totally. And I, you know, I was writing down not just, you know, the moments when I felt great and things were good, but also those fears, anxieties, those uncomfortable kind of physical niggles, mental ones as well. And it was important to be reminded because right now I have had a number of nights where uncharacteristically I have been going to bed overthinking, feeling a bit anxious, kind of going, why? I've done this before.
Yeah.
Why am I feeling this way?
I think the thing is every pregnancy is so different.
Yeah.
So just because you've done it once before and, you know, you may have had either a lovely positive experience or indeed the complete contrasting, you know, quite a traumatic, maybe a negative experience.
Sure.
It doesn't by any means have any reflection on how this experience is going to be. But we're also designed to hone in that last trimester and really focus on, you know, okay, how are things going to change? And I know certainly for me, you know, meeting my second little boy, I was really very worried about how our family dynamic was going to change and the feelings of, oh my gosh, am I just going to wreck this little kid's life? You know, I'm his person. I'm here all day, every day. And oh, my heart was just breaking into worrying about this, never mind the birth. So there's just so many different aspects to it. It's not just, you know, doing your pelvic floor exercises and, you know, sitting out in your birthing ball. Yes, they're important, but it has to be as this sort of three-tiered approach and allowing those feelings and making sure you're supported in them too.
And it's so different for every, I mean, we keep saying it, and it's not just something that's come up through these episodes, but throughout many different conversations on this podcast, everybody's different. Mm-hmm. So everybody's experience of pregnancy and motherhood will be really, really different. And that's okay. And I think the moment we stop comparing ourselves to other people is a good, it's a good time.
Sooner you can do that.
Yeah, let go. Because you know what? You're doing your thing. Stay in your lane. How you're feeling is how you're feeling. You need to honour that. So some people will not necessarily breeze through pregnancy. I don't think anybody necessarily breezes through it, but some people have a really glorious pregnancy and just love the changes and feel wonderful. And other people really struggle with that.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I have to say I'm very fortunate. I feel very lucky to be in this position, but having had two losses before this pregnancy, it's different.
Pregnancy after loss, man. It's not, honestly, having gone through three losses myself, I'm so there with you. And I feel like, you know, it's nearly harder than the loss itself. I feel like, I don't know how you've been feeling, but for me, emotionally, I was like, oh, yeah. No, I'm putting everything on the back burner because this baby's not going to be here until they're in my arms. I found it really hard to both connect, but also to connect with the experience ahead of me because I was sort of in denial. And I think there isn't really space to talk about that. And I think that's a big part. That's going to be a big part of your journey. That's going to be a big part of whether or not you've been having a glorious pregnancy in terms of, you know, feeling very asymptomatic, having, you know, lovely luscious hair and great skin and all of the lovely glow. I think that's another part to it that you have to also kind of honour.
Absolutely.
And give space to. And that's what you want to be writing in your journal. That's what you want to be kind of processing and working through.
And that's why writing is so important. I have found not as good as I was first time round, but I certainly think that, you know, now again, reading over what I had written this morning before we came in here, I will write in my journal tonight, because it's so important to really honour your feelings and write it down. And sometimes if you are feeling fearful about something, writing it down on paper takes a bit of that power away.
I'm so glad you said that, because a huge part of what I do, both in antenatal education from a more sort of holistic perspective, but also in hypnobirthing, is sort of that... The fear release, right? And we do a sort of a six-step fear release sort of process. And a huge part of it is just writing down, acknowledging and making more concrete those fears.
Yeah.
So that is the first step in facing them, in finding out that sort of that birth team, whether that is a person, whether that is having, you know, sort of talking to somebody, whether that is writing down in your journal, whether that is making sure you've got, you know, things that are going to make you feel good and help you move, like we were saying before, about that feeling of away from fear and more towards confidence around birth. Because birth can be such a wonderful, exciting, empowering experience. But if you've got fear standing in the way, that's a very significant barrier to that experience. So writing it down is just so powerful.
Yeah. Mm. I'm so glad you said that, because I think fear is a player, and it's a normal probably protection that happens, because when we're unsure about the unknown, it's the unknown. If you haven't done it before, of course you're going to be frightened of it, because we've been bombarded in society by, you know, images of screaming pregnant women in labour and all. So that kind of lodges in your brain.
Well, from the minute you're born, you're kind of, you know, this is how it's going to look. And then we've got the screaming shows on TV where it's the blood and the guts and the gore. And one born every minute, of course, dramatises everything around birth.
Yeah.
So if that's all you're seeing, you know, it doesn't make good TV if someone just comes in, breathes through their surges, pops up on the bed, has a baby. And that's it. That's not exciting, you know, viewing. So that paired with everyone likes to talk about their negative experience. People don't shout from the rooftops, I had an incredible birth and I cannot wait to do it again. Because people are worried about how, you know, that might impact the person beside them who hasn't had that experience.
That's exactly it. And something we touched on actually with Lucianne as well, that, and I was really glad she said it. And afterwards she wondered, should I have said that? And I was like, I think it was good that you did. And by I'm referring to the fact that she said, you know, sometimes she can dumb down her experience of having a drug-free birth because for fear of maybe triggering somebody else. Yeah. But actually, you have to own it too. Your experience is your experience. And whether that was a good one or not so good, it's yours. Own it. And for a lot of people who go on to have a drug-free birth experience, a lot of work has gone in beforehand, usually.
Yeah.
To hopefully allow that to present itself. It doesn't always even work out, even if you've done all the planning, you've done everything else. Sometimes baby has other plans. But if you're fortunate and things align, you have to own it. Because reading over my diary, I did so much work last time.
Yeah.
I actually didn't realise how much work I had done between courses, meditations, affirmations, daily exercises, you know, mind, body, spirit stuff. So in a way, it doesn't surprise me that I was fortunate enough to go on to have the birth experience that I'd hoped for, because I put a lot of work into it.
Oh, you worked so hard. And I think
But I haven't this time, which is why I'm like, come on, it's week 30.
You know what?
Get your ass in gear.
I think the thing is, you know, that aspect of what you were talking about, the kind of the unknown, and that's where the fear kind of stems from. One of the sort of mottos that I have is the more you know, the less you fear.
Yes.
So that means when it comes to preparation, you're not saying, I only got this, you know, I'm sort of gesticulating wildly here. You've only got this narrow-minded point of view of it must go perfectly. I will do this and this and this and this, and I will go into labour and it will be 4 hours long and I'm going to use gas and air and breathing and that's it. It has to be, okay, what if birth takes this route?
Yeah, exactly.
Let me see how that might look. Let's explore that. Let's create preferences around that. That if for some reason I had to be induced, okay, what would I like? What would I not like? How can I create a scenario and an environment that is conducive within those restraints? So it means when you're creating your preferences, you've got your plan A, B, and C. So if you are faced with one of those, it's something that you could sit back and go, oh, you know what? I'm so glad for modern medicine. Mm-hmm. I am so happy with that experience. And all of that preparation is never for no reason. Yeah. It always is going to benefit you, even if that means, you know, the sort of the debriefing afterwards, because you understood it.
Yes.
You knew how that was going to look, or you had an inkling. It wasn't so unknown that, you know, okay, you know, you maybe perhaps were, you know, the individual who's labored for 3 days, baby's been in an icky position, and it's been sort of the discussion has come up around, okay, I think we might have to start prepping for cesarean. And you can go, okay, cool, I've got all of these tools. I've got this great toolkit. I can come back to my birthing breath, and I can have, you know, an environment when I can deliver my baby, because you're delivering your baby no matter how they come, whether it's a belly birth or a vaginal delivery, yeah, that you can have those tools and yeah, have a really empowering birth experience no matter how it looks. That's what birth prep is all about. That's what hypnobirthing is all about.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Brilliant. And I think there's a lot of people that need to hear that, because, you know, sometimes we can get tied up with, you know, comparison again and having these wishes, desires. But the problem is with having a rigid idea of what you want, if you're rigid within it, or mm-hmm, if you're structured, it's something that's, you know, it's going to, there's going to be a blocker there. So you do need to kind of release, let go, and have the ideal scenario, and then prepare yourself for all eventualities, as you explained. Mm-hmm. Really, really important.
You had a lovely sentence just before we started recording, and I think if anyone takes home anything from listening to this, it's just beautiful, is that, and surrendering. That, just that word,
yeah,
to just surrender to the process. Have all the information. Have, you know, your army of ideas and plans and prep and all of the things, but being able to just surrender to the process and know that you didn't have to tell your body how to make, you know, 4 chambers of your baby's heart. You didn't have to tell your body to, you know, digest a sandwich, all of these different things. And our body's very capable of birthing our babies. So even if, like that, you go home and you do no prep, our body is still going to do what it's going to do.
Yes.
So being able to surrender to the process, whether that is a cesarean birth, whether that is, you know, baby needing a little bit of help at the end, being able to surrender to that and give yourself, I suppose, the breath, the breathing space to just be, this is how it's going to be.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah, it is huge.
We beat ourselves up so much, don't we? As mothers,
much.
Oh my gosh.
Big time, big time. And I think being aware of what you are absorbing through your ears, through your eyes, every part of you is important, particularly I think when we're in the third trimester. Mm. For me, what really worked was listening to empowering birth stories.
Yes.
You know, because if you hear these stories about these women that have done it before, why would you be any different?
Absolutely. And the thing is, as well, is, you know, yes, you're saying sort of listening to the stories, but it only takes one negative one. And they say it takes 10 positives to make up for a negative comment or a negative story. So if you're saying, okay, you know, how can I diffuse a situation whereby, you know, Bridie down the road wants to share her really scary story with you. Yeah. How can I sort of diffuse that situation? And I love coming back to the really basic one of, Bridie, I'm going to stop you there. Thank you. I'm so honored that you want to share your story with me. Let's wait until I've had my baby, and then I can even better empathize with you. Mm. What I'm trying to do at the moment is just surround myself with positivity to really, you know, make sure that I can do everything that I can within my power to feel good and excited about this birth.
Yes.
And Bridie will go, oh yeah, cool, great. And you say, looking forward to the cup of tea with you, cup of tea and a chat.
Yeah, lovely.
And, you know, you're stopping her in a nice way, or stopping him in a nice way, whoever it might be, because everyone wants to share their story, and those stories also deserve to be heard. So it's a hard one when, you know, everyone wants to tell you, and, you know, and my experience was this, and it's like, yes, fantastic. Can we put a pause on it?
Yeah. Well, actually, I'd love to know your opinion on this. I'm not sure. I don't think I shouted it from the rooftops. I did share it with my closest mm-hmm, friends and family, that my desire was to have a natural drug-free birth. But I think I was relatively conservative about who I'd say it to, for fear that I'd be told, you know, that's crazy talk. That's typical kind of first time mom talk.
Yeah. Or you wouldn't have that experience and then you go, oh.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a funny one. I think we're the same with everything though, right? If you say, oh, you know, I've got this job interview and I'm going to ace it. I prepped really well. I'm so excited for it. And I'm really, you know, I think I'm going to get the job. You don't say that necessarily either. I was so shouting about it. I was like, I'm doing all the things. This is how I would like it to look. If you're there, this is, you know, can you hold my hand? Can you, you know, I want to be supported in this. And I think equally, I probably would have shouted just as loud if things hadn't gone to plan, because I feel like those stories are going to help someone.
Yeah,
and if I don't talk about them, why would anyone else feel comfortable talking about them?
That's a good point.
And it's also really important, I think we have without kind of delving too much into it, this sort of weird thing of you go into the hospital, you get up on the bed and the things happen to you. So, you know, you go in and, you know, say the doctor came in, they examined me, they told me this, they told me that the baby would be this and this, and we're going to, hang up a bag of oxytocin and we're going to give you X amount of time, as opposed to, I prepared myself really well. I knew that, I wanted to avoid oxytocin if I could. So I did. You know, I think hearing the stories of women being empowered in their births and empowered around the decisions and empowered around the preparation can only be a good thing. You know, if it's something that suits you, if it's something you're not feeling uncomfortable sharing, because there's no right or wrong way to do it either.
Yeah. Let's talk about all the things we can do and the things that maybe we should avoid doing to best prepare ourselves for those latter weeks of pregnancy.
Let's start with the negatives so we can end on a positive.
Go for it.
I suppose just really what you were saying, to be completely honest, the surrounding yourself with positives only. So for me, I always sort of send my clients off with a little bit of homework. So I say, you know, your job is to stop watching one born every minute. Your job is to start visualizing how your dream birth scenario might be.
Can I ask why? Because I went through a spell of watching one born every minute.
Oh my gosh, so do I. I love it. It's awful. You know what though? Start watching Call the Midwife. That's awesome.
Okay.
That's, you know, if you're like, I want to watch birth related stuff, there's so much you can do. You can just, you know, take a different road. Start watching Call the Midwife. If you want to watch something, sit down and watch something. There's, fantastic podcasts out there. The Australian Birth Podcast is great. There's birth photography on Instagram. I actually will share all of these sort of resources with you afterwards, because I always say this, you know, here's your little bundle. Go and just immerse yourself in all things birth. And, you know, like that, having the conversations, maybe setting up a little visualization board with, you know, pictures of how you would like the room to be. So you're thinking, you know, dim lighting, you're thinking, you know, avoiding the sort of the harsh hospital lighting. And the reason for that is, you know, you want to work with your hormones, not against them. And that cocktail of hormones that happens, you want, you know, the oxytocin boosters, you want things that the oxytocin is your birth helper. So you want to be having a room that is conducive to that, as well as melatonin being the oxytocin helper. So a room that is dim, and you're thinking romance, right? You want, you know, all of the yummy foods. You want to be having that one comedy sketch that you're saving for birth, and you're going to watch that in early labor. You're thinking,
that's if you get that.
Yes, do you totally. Know, but you can
enough.
Do that when you're having an induction.
Okay.
You know,
it's funny. I didn't really. So my labor was relatively quick, considering it's first time.
Yeah.
So I didn't get all those things I had in the
really?
List.
Really? You were just like, okay, we're having a baby.
Just didn't happen. So in a nutshell, very quickly, just for those listening, my waters broke on my due date that morning. I went into the coombe and was very clearly told that if I didn't start to go into spontaneous labour, I didn't start contractions myself, that the time was, the clock was ticking. And that's
nerve-wracking in itself.
You know, I suppose.
Straight away, you're like, oxytocin's down here.
I actually probably made me a bit cross, if I'm totally honest, because I was kind of like, no, God damn it.
I had a plan.
I have a plan. This does not bear the plan. So we went home, and I suppose I went into the zone. Look, I'm very fortunate that at 6:30 that evening, my first contraction started, and by 10:30 I was in the coombe, and my partner told the midwife, I think my partner is in labour, and she said, oh right, yeah, and she came out, and I was in between contractions, so I was very still, I was very quiet. I was probably meditating, eyes closed, sitting there, and she went, oh right, yeah, we'll have a look, we'll
whatever.
See whatever, and I was already 6 centimetres.
No way.
Yeah, so I kind of missed.
Oh my goodness.
No.
You bombed it.
But I was vomiting in the sink in the kitchen.
Yeah.
With the pain.
So things,
like, it was full
happening.
On. It wasn't a barrel of laughs, but it was amazing. And it moved a lot quicker than I ever thought. And I was like a wild caged animal on the way into the coombe. I just.
That courage.
Oh my gosh. But look, I had an amazing birth experience and I'm extremely fortunate. And I know I was very lucky. But I suppose I had all of these lovely plans because I'd heard that first time, usually...
You have the time.
You have the time and it takes, you know, it can be slow. So I know I'm slightly not the average in that sense. So I missed out on all of those lovely... But majority of women will get to have that. So that's really good advice. And also the dim lighting, it's not just, as you explained brilliantly there, about hormones and everything. I suppose I remember hearing this in one of the antenatal classes and it was brilliant. It was about animals. Animals who are about to give birth, what do they do? They go off and they find a dark...
You find your kittens in the laundry basket, you know.
They'll find themselves a lovely little dark corner.
Sort of snug and cosy and safe.
A little cave.
Absolutely.
So you want to create that idea?
Absolutely. And there's this lovely, they say, you know, during war times that mums actually held on to their babies for up to 4 weeks more because they were like, you know, now is not the time. Now it is not safe. So they waited until there was, you know, the safety to be able to have their babies. And yeah, you're creating a scenario where you feel safe and supported and unobserved. That's why a lot of women will go into the bathroom and they'll have their babies over the loo. Because if that happens, make sure you lift up the lid, put down two towels, put the toilet seat down, just in case. You don't want to be giving the birth into the toilet.
Yeah.
But it does happen because that's where you feel, no one's going to come in and knock on the door. You know, I've got my safe space. You know, you can, and it doesn't have to be anything fancy. It doesn't have to be your string of fairy lights and your salt lamps. It can be turn off the main hospital room lights, which are quite harsh and abrasive. And generally speaking, most hospital rooms will have what's used as a suturing light. If there's any requirement for stitches at any point, you have this light that comes down from the ceiling. So you literally pull that down and turn that to face the corner. And that way everyone can see what they're doing. So everyone can, you know, write their notes, do their paperwork, and no one's crashing into one another. But you can create that little space of safety. You can create that little almost womb-like environment for yourself. So it doesn't have to be buying all the fancy things, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I suppose, again, I can only speak from my own experience. I thought they were absolutely brilliant in the comb.
Yeah.
Really great. And very respectful of my wish. And even though you are in the hospital environment, I felt like, you know, the lights were dimmed in the room and there was an understanding there. And I think we're getting better at that. I hope we are.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
In my experience now versus, you know, even 3 years ago, I feel like oftentimes now I say, you know, I'll send my clients off and say, you know, just chat through your care provider with, you know, these birth preferences that you've created with me. And they'll come back to me and say, you know, they actually told me that that's normal practice now. Which is great. You know, things like
great
the delayed cord clamping, the care providers are going, oh yeah, we do that. Don't worry about that. You know, perfect. And, you know, encouraging sort of breastfeeding afterwards. They're like, oh, of course we're going to support you. So it is happening.
Now that you mentioned the delayed cord clamping, can we explain it for those who are hearing that maybe for the first time as to why it's important?
Gosh, there's so much language that I forget. I have to, you know, I talk about this all day long. It's awful. So delayed cord clamping, essentially when your baby is born, there is still blood flowing through the placenta, from the placenta to your baby, filled with stem cells and, you know, really beautiful oxygenated blood that's for your baby. And, you know, rewind maybe 10 years or so ago, we used to cut and clamp the cord straight away and the baby was sort of whisked off and checked, you know, away from the mother. Nowadays, we know that actually it's fantastic for baby to get that extra little boost, and actually it helps to keep their hemoglobin levels really boosted. They feed a lot more efficiently. They get a really good start in life. So allowing the cord to pulsate, which means the blood to continue to flow through it until it's white and limp, means your baby's getting that little extra boost. The only issue with you actually is you're going to have to get a little sample taken from the cord. So you probably remember that from last time. So
because we discussed this before we started recording.
Yes,
we're both rhesus negative.
Yeah.
So they'll always have to check what blood type the baby is.
Exactly. And you can run into issues. So if your baby is the same blood type as you, you're sort of hunky-dory happy days. If your baby is another blood type, so generally the type of blood as your daddy as the daddy or the donor, that you end up then possibly running into troubles with your baby being a little bit more jaundiced, and you end up having to have an injection yourself just to make sure to protect you for future pregnancies, to make sure your body doesn't go, what's that? We don't like that. So, yeah, in a nutshell, you can ask for a blood sample to be taken from the placenta itself. So you can still have a degree of cord clamping still.
Yes, yeah. And these are important things to include in your birth preferences. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, we were just sharing each other's notes beforehand as well. Mine aren't very long. It's on one page. It's not pages and pages. But yeah. I was very clear about what the ideal scenario is. And the cord clamping is one of the things I included on it. And I requested that, you know, my partner, the baby's dad, would cut the cords. They're nice things that you can, again, it helps with the bonding. And I know we haven't mentioned it, and it sort of is the elephant in the room. We are still in a period of restrictions. We're hoping that they will lift and continue to lift over the coming weeks and
still
months.
But
it's been so tough. I have obviously very strong views on it, and I really feel for the women and couples who have had, you know, a difficult experience within these times. But I do think that, you know, those working in hospitals are doing their best, and they're trying to keep people safe and look after them. But it's not easy.
No, and it's moving.
It's not easy.
It's moving.
It is moving.
There are lots of people, really incredible people, who are fighting to have these changes made.
Which is great. Absolutely. So imagine we're now, you know, a few weeks out from our due date, and we have gone in for a check, and perhaps baby is breech or in a different position where the head isn't down. What can we do to help baby get in the right position?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. So this is something that's very close to my heart, because my first was completely breech, like frank breech, legs up by his head. We're not going anywhere until 38 weeks.
Okay, yeah.
So I was like, oh my gosh, I'm doing all the things. And you know, one of the biggest things that I learned is it's about creating space. So your uterus is not a floating balloon in your pelvis. It's tied with sort of ligaments, and it's really quite, you know, very well held in place for, you know, birth and create, you know, the gravid uterus making space for your baby to grow in your belly. So the best thing that you can do is make sure that there's no tension there. So things like body work, so going to see a chiropractor to have a kind of, I suppose, if there's any tension there, sort of released. So creating the space again. Things like forward leaning inversions particularly. So that's where you are quite literally, you've got your forearms down on the floor and your knees and your bottom sticking up in the air as much as you can.
And it probably a position, if people have done yoga, they'll probably be familiar. It's like child's pose.
It's like downward dog.
But
downward dog, I would say, if your baby is the wrong way, probably isn't quite enough.
Okay. So downward dog is basically hands and feet on
and
the mat.
And with the bum in the air. So the idea is, what you're doing is, perhaps if a baby is engaged in the wrong position, which means they're snuggled into your pelvis already, you're giving space for your both all of the ligaments to release and, you know, sort of calm down and, you know, create the space and relaxation for your baby to re-engage in a better position. But you're also encouraging your baby to come out of the pelvis a little bit, so that when you kind of come back out of that position and if out of your inversion, and you're holding it for sort of two of your birth breaths, so breathing in for four and out for six, that's kind of how long. And then you want to take a moment for your uterus to settle and for your baby to have the space to sort of reconfigure themselves. So the ideal position is, if you know, your baby's snuggled into the perfect position for birth, they want to have the shortest spiral through your pelvis, so your baby's to spiral through, they don't come straight out. And what you want to be doing to encourage that is, yes, space, and yes, you know, relaxation within that sort of pelvic floor. So they say, you know, do your pelvic floor exercises, but actually in those last 2 weeks, like we're talking about, you're talking about doing things like your child's pose, and, you know, focusing on relaxing and releasing the pelvic floor. You want to be, you know, making sure that everything is supple and released and relaxed for your baby to move through, not keeping everything tight and toned and, you know, sort of creating a barrier to baby moving through there.
And this is where spinning babies as well is actually great. So
fabulous.
If you haven't heard of this, we might link the website here as well.
There's going to be like paragraphs with all of these
ideas.
Yeah,
loads of info. But it's really good. And, you know, they're basically little movements and exercises that you can do on a daily basis that can help. And again, I think it's just an opportunity to connect with you and your baby. Because at the end of the day, when it comes to the, I suppose, the essence of your birth team. It's you and your baby, or babies, as the case may be. That's really where it's at. And spinning babies is just lovely. I really enjoyed it first time round as well.
Yeah, great. And I think as well, it's in those last 2 weeks, you're nearly looking for something to do, aren't you? So to say, okay, and I'm going to do this, this and this. That's probably what's going to feel make you feel more prepared, where you've got a little list. I know for me, I had a similar feeling because I was like, I've got a toddler running around at home. I'm working full time. Where on earth am I going to find the time to do the preparation? And it was about finding those little windows during the day. Okay, I'm in the shower now. I'm going to take a few deep breaths and just visualize how my breath is going to be. Or I'm driving in the car and I'm going to say out loud, how my breath is going to go.
Absolutely. And the other one I did, and I've shared this a few times with people before, because I found it massively effective. I suppose when I trained in yoga, so I'm a trained yoga teacher, and I realized that, what you feed the mind, the body believes.
Absolutely.
And I suppose I really put it into practice 4 years ago when I was pregnant with my little boy. And I decided to write up my own affirmations that I felt connected to. So I had them on post-its, right, all over the house.
You're like, everywhere.
Everywhere. I always think, that movie with Russell Crowe, A Beautiful Mind?
Oh, yeah. The window. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was basically our gaff.
Wherever you're going to be reading them. Yeah. If it's on the mirror, if it's, on the back of the door, then toilet.
That's it. I was sitting on the loo, and right in front of me were the coloured post-its with, I trust my body, I can do this, me and my baby are the best.
Yeah, and writing them yourself is huge.
It is, yeah.
Taking the process of, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to do this. So,
and again, that's connected to your emotional body, they always say, when you're writing things down by hand. So don't type them up. So just literally write them yourself.
It doesn't matter what about your handwriting. It doesn't have to be
absolutely
beautiful.
And mine is I'm the only one who can read what I write. So yeah, I had them all over the house, in the bedroom, on the chest of drawers, in the loo, and the ensuite, in the kitchen, everywhere. And yes, it looked absolutely batshit crazy, but I really feel it worked, because not once did I ask for drugs. And it's not like me. I'm not a hero. If I have, obviously, if I have a headache, I'll lurry the water into me. I'll try and remedy it naturally. But if it's really bad, I will take a Panadol. Yeah. I will. Yeah. No problem. But I not once did I ask for drugs, because I really feel like I had trained my mind to believe that I could do it. So when it came to it, I was a well-oiled machine, because for weeks and weeks I'd been doing it. Now, this is not to freak anyone out who's perhaps nearing their due date going, well, I haven't done any of this. You can still do it. There's always time. I think there's always time.
Even if you're writing them in on the way in the car to the hospital.
Yeah.
You're saying it to your partner, I can do this. And he's saying back to you, I can do this.
Yeah. And thanks for saying that, because I think that's a huge part as well. Having your partner, your husband, whoever it is, somebody that believes in you as much as you want to believe in yourself is really important, because I had that. I was very lucky that I had that. He really believed in me. He really believed that
he
I could
like,
do
I
it.
He was like, I know you can do it.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And even there were times when I was starting, the energy was starting to falter a little bit. And he was there to say reassuring words and give me that boost that I needed. And I felt very lucky for that.
So, there's nothing, honestly, it's my favourite part of birth.
Yeah.
Is watching a couple do it together.
Yeah.
And that can, that can be the doula. That can be whoever your birth partner is.
And I was very lucky, actually. First time around, I had both a doula.
Did you? Oh, amazing.
And my partner,
had the team.
I know. Yeah. I was very lucky. Very lucky. Yeah.
That's so wonderful.
And my wonderful consultants and my wonderful midwife.
Surrounded.
I was, talk about stars aligning. I was very lucky.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra.
and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit UH1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Yeah.
Just coming back on those affirmations and, you know, taking the time to write them up and the time to process all of that. One of the reasons that they say that they work is you have, you know, the left side of your brain and the right side of your brain. And when it comes to sort of preparing for birth, and I call it kind of brain training for birth, you are talking about tapping into that left side because that's where, you know, the thing, that's where your subconscious is. And that's where those affirmations speak to. So during pregnancy, we say that you have a sort of more malleability. So there's more room for growth and change during pregnancy. So tapping into that, writing out those affirmations and, you know, thinking, okay, what is going to speak to me? What are my fears here? Okay, let's think about something that's going to solidify my abilities and, you know, speak to those fears and help me work through them. I was just glued to them. There were points where I was just so zoning in on this one that just said release. And it was what I had been telling myself my whole pregnancy.
And God, if one word was important when it comes to birth,
that's all you need.
You got to let go.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's the fear in our mind will translate into the body. When you're afraid and obviously what's going to happen, your body's going to tense up and it's going to make it more difficult. Mm-hmm. And it seems like sometimes a bridge too far for people, but you got to trust in your body and know that all you have to do is trust that it knows how to do this. There is an ancient knowing within your body that knows how to birth your baby, and you know your baby's going to arrive
absolutely. And I think the thing is, you know, I suppose another way of saying exactly what you've just said is a lot about birth prep and all about birthing your baby is about unlearning. It's about, you know, we've been fed all of these negative stories. So actually, I'm just going to come back to a space of my body knows what to do.
Yeah.
If you did absolutely nothing, and like that, you know, with your first experience, you didn't have the time for the massage and the aromatherapy and the lovely things, but you had done the training in your mind to be able to just be in your body, to come back to your breath and create that bubble of sort of confidence and empowerment around your experience. And that's what it's all about.
Absolutely,
really.
It is.
Yeah, you don't need to spend money on anything.
No, you don't. And you know, you touched on it there, and it is about speaking to the unconscious part of your mind. When people are telling you those horror stories, or you're watching the one born every minute, you're perhaps seeing, you know, difficult birth experiences that are not going to help you. So you definitely need to be quite, I think, discerning about what you consume, what you watch, and really focus on only allowing the good stuff in.
Yeah,
because the more you allow that in,
isn't it? And you think, okay, that force field works quite beautifully going into birth too. So even if you're having your cesarean birth and you're saying, okay, you know, my baby's not happy, but I've got this lovely bubble here and we're going to have this experience and I'm just going to be in it. And you can move that through to your postpartum too. You can, you know, oh my gosh, this is really overwhelming. I feel like I need another set of hands here, or, you know, my nipples are sore and I need support. Having the force field to just, okay, we're going to sit, we're going to be in it, we're going to get the support, things are going to be okay. That's what hypnobirthing is about too, isn't it? It's in the brain training aspect of it. It doesn't have to be, things are only going to be one way. And I think that's something I really want people to take home. And just because birth didn't go the way that you had planned does not mean that it was anything less than incredible.
Yes.
You are incredible. It's so amazing.
Absolutely. And a lot of women do feel a sense of disappointment if, you know, they have labored to a point and then they're told, you know, we're going to have to perhaps intervene. It might result in a C-section or whatever it is. And there's a huge sense of, oh, right, this is what's going to happen now.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to own that. You're doing nothing wrong. And sometimes steps need to be taken. You said it earlier, and this is where it's very true. I'm a big believer in, if you can avoid medical intervention, if that's your wish fantastic, but there are times when it's necessary for the safety of your baby and you. And isn't that a brilliant, wonderful thing?
Yeah.
And we have these resources nowadays.
That's exactly it. And I think to be able to, you know, the more you know, the less you fear. And I think if you understand the situations that have arisen and are then in it, it means that instead of feeling really disheartened, really disappointed and really, you know, oh gosh, I wish things could have been this way. And, you know, it went against everything that I had wanted. You can actually come at it, you know, feel in a place of thank you. This is, I'm so grateful.
Yes.
And that's what I would like to see women feeling and, you know, empowered no matter how it looked.
Let's talk about the other things that we can do to help get ourselves in the zone for labour, for spontaneous labour, to help bring it about, basically. I know that I tried quite a few things. Evening primrose oil.
So, yes. In terms of, you know, the evidence for this one, it's quite strong. Orally, not so much. You're okay. Talking about inserting two capsules vaginally. So generally, I say it's two capsules. It's 1,000 milligrams, right? So that's normally two capsules. And you want to pierce them first and then you insert them vaginally. I always say put on a little panty liner or a pad because it does come out, you know, generally in the morning or when you get up to go to the loo in the middle of the night. So just you're not wrecking your necks or your pajamas or whatever.
Yeah.
Or bed sheets. Oil is a pain to clean. But the reason that it works really beautifully is that it helps just to soften and ripen and prepare the cervix. So our cervix has to do sort of, it has to soften, ripen and sort of efface, so thin out and as well as open and dilate. So it has to do quite a lot of things. And the prostaglandin effect, which is that softening, ripening effect of the evening primrose oil is where that works. So research is quite good on that one. I always say wait until 37 weeks just because it can be quite powerful. So you're making sure that if you were to go into labour that your baby's, you know, ready to come out and can be absolutely fine in the outside world.
And any particular brands or would any kind of brands that's available do the job?
You just want to make sure it's as pure as possible. So there's no kind of added extras.
Fab. Perineum massage.
Yeah.
I did this from week 36 last time around. Wasn't the most comfortable experience.
Not sexy.
No. But I was glad I did it. I was very lucky I didn't have any tearing. And I wonder, was that a part of the reason why I didn't? And that's obviously why I did it.
Yeah.
In the hope that I would have a vaginal birth. And I suppose I had heard the horror stories and I wanted to maybe give myself the best fighting chance of being okay afterwards. So I did it. And can we talk about that and see if it's something maybe that a listener might want to try out themselves?
Absolutely. So when it comes to reducing the likelihood of tearing, and tearing generally is one of the bigger fears for particularly for first time mums, and the likelihood of having a degree of tearing with your first baby is quite high. So, you know, doing everything that you can to, I suppose, stack the odds in your favour against tearing is fantastic. Perineal massage is one, but not the only thing that you can do. And the idea with perineal massage is that you are sort of increasing the elasticity and the tone in that area, but you're also preparing yourself for that sort of stinging sensation. We call it the ring of fire as your baby's head is crowning or coming through the birth canal, coming through the vagina, the very last part. And what happens often is as we reach that point, we clench up and we go, oh, no, I don't like this. And, you know, the baby then coming through, because our uterus is still working to push our baby through despite the, you know, discomfort, if we can create that sort of softness and learn to sort of breathe through the sensation, we're lessening the likelihood of tearing. Mm. So you should notice a sort of an increase in elasticity and tone in that area after about 2 weeks of practicing it.
Okay, great. Now, I will say, I mean, you know, when my son's head was being born, I wasn't breathing gently. And I do think while it's important to share positive birth stories, and mine certainly was, I also think it's important to acknowledge and be real and empower women with the reality that it definitely was for me the most challenging experience of my life, but also with that obviously the most amazing and one I wouldn't change. And it can be hard to make sense of that if you haven't experienced it, and those who have will get it, because it regardless of whether you've had an epidural or natural, it doesn't matter, it's life altering. Giving birth is a life-altering experience. You rewire in every way. It's it is extremely powerful. But it's not easy.
That's where the preparation comes in, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah,
it does.
It's, you know, you wouldn't run a marathon without training for it.
No.
And I think birth really and truly is the biggest marathon that you will ever complete. And, you know, like we were saying, stacking the things in your favour and knowing about the different eventualities and what you can do to sort of help you have a more comfortable and more empowering experience overall is always going to be a benefit.
Yes. So the perineum massage essentially is where you apply pressure, and the most effective way is usually like thumbs.
Mm-hmm. There's a fantastic video, because I'm trying to visualize how we will describe this, but yes, thumbs, certainly, in a downward sweeping motion, and then holding at different points along the perineum, which is the part between your vagina and your anus, in a sort of downward pressure, and you're sort of thinking of, okay, holding the pressure downward, almost like you're swinging along a little hammock or a little U-shape, and you should do it for sort of 5 to 10 minutes, and doing it 3 times a week is loads.
Yeah, and you might not want to do it. I certainly didn't really look forward to doing it, but I was glad I did.
Yeah, and you took the opportunity, you were saying, to sort of take the time then to sort of practice your breathing and
exactly
connect with how the experience might be and really take in the sensations. And
perhaps it does psychologically prepare you for that hot sensation that you get when you are in active labour and you are giving birth. But look, I mean, look, like all these things, again, it's just, I think this is the one part of your life where head in the sand, or, you know, wanting to hide away from it, it's not going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
So knowledge really is power when it comes to birthing your baby. And regardless of what you decide, whether that is an elected C-section or whether you want to go natural with drug free, knowledge is power, and running away from it will only increase anxiety. I think the more you know, as you said, the less you fear, and it's so true.
Absolutely.
So true.
There's other things that you can do. So if you don't feel like doing, you know, that you're either yourself or your partner, or it's just too awkward, or you just feel like it's not right for you to do the perineal massage, you can invest. There's two devices. There's the Epino, and there's another one called the Annie Ball. And essentially, they're little devices that you pop inside the vagina and you inflate slowly. And with some of them, you actually, you know, use it to breathe out the device. So you're practicing pushing a baby out, essentially. And you increase the sort of the size and the circumference of this device to the, you know, the 10 centimetres or, you know, whatever it is, where you would be pushing your baby out. And there are other things you can do. So making sure that your care provider has a low incidence of episiotomy being given is a lovely way to do that. The statistics aren't quite updated, but bump to babe is a great place to look for the stats around where you're giving birth.
Okay, great.
So, you know, when you come to choosing your birth place, if you were, you know, at that point still in your pregnancy, that's a lovely place to start. Other things is labouring in water. So it actually carries on for up to 2 hours after labouring in water. So if you said, okay, I'm going to get into the pool or get into the bath at some point, sorry, 2 hours, 6 hours, oh my gosh, up to 6 hours.
Really? Six
so
hours,
if you said,
brilliant,
okay, early labour, I'm going to get into the bath. Kitty said, at some point, I have to get into the bath in my labour. Those benefits in terms of that sort of softening of that area carry right through for 6 hours. So if you go on to have your baby within that next 6 hours, you're going to carry those benefits with you.
That's brilliant.
Amazing.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, so great. And, you know, huge body of evidence behind that one. The next one then is birthing in an upright position, or simply not birthing on your back. So if you're in an upright or even on your side, so sort of left lateral position, you're creating up to 30% more space in your pelvis. So it means you've got space for your baby's head to come through. And avoiding coached pushing, which is still done if you have an epidural and you can't feel your surges coming and going. But if you don't have one in place, going with those surges. So you may find that as it comes up to that pushing phase, you actually only feel the urge to bear down or the urge to push your baby out every second surge. And that's very normal as it's sort of nudging your baby along, but not just simply pushing when you're being told to push, because there's a reason your baby's head comes forward and back. It's stretching out the perineum and going with your body, as opposed to when someone who's not feeling the surge is coming and going the same way you are, means you're lessening the likelihood of tearing.
Okay, brilliant. We have probably spoken more about labour and birth than I had thought we would, but it's obviously meant to have happened that way, which is fantastic. And it'll be
So much, isn't there?
So much, and it'll tie in brilliantly with next week's episode as well, where we talk all things labour and childbirth. But let's go back a step to the hospital bag and the what to get, because that can feel overwhelming for first timers, you know, to know, oh, what do I need to get? And I need to buy this and I need to buy that. But in the beginning, you probably don't need as much as you think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, certainly. And I think with second time mums, you realise that. You go, oh my God, I packed, you know, nearly the kitchen sink. And did I use any of it?
Yeah, my labour bag never got opened. I didn't have a chance.
But. You were so fast. But the thing is that's just a lovely, you know, testament to show that you don't actually need a lot of it, right?
Yeah.
You know, you had it all in you. But I always say pack two separate bags. So you've got a bag that goes with you, particularly at the moment, because, you know, you can always send your partner back down to the car to go and get the bag for afterwards. They tend to be a little bit bigger with, you know, changes of nighties and whatever else. But for the actual labour bags, so things that are going to help you, whether that's your aromatherapy, maybe it's your little LED candles, maybe it's, you know, your earbuds or your eye mask, whatever it might be, put that in a separate bag so you're not fumbling around trying to find it or trying to describe to your partner where to find the things before I forget, because a mom brain is so real. Get your partner to repack your bag. So you might have put the things together. You might have got your checklist, gone through the whole thing, got them all beautifully packed away, perhaps in little clear sandwich bags so that you, or packing cubes, even better, so you can have everything clearly labelled and know where it is. But get your partner to then repack it, to put everything in. Because generally, it's going to be them who's going to be rooting things out, right? They know where everything is then. If you're sent off to go and get a cloth or, you know, whatever it might be. Gosh, hilarious. I'm after forgetting another thing to reduce the tearing. Nice warm compress as baby's head is coming through. So if you're sending your partner to go and get, you know, your warm compress or your cloth or your face spray, they know where it is. You're not trying to say it's beside the thing and up from this and it's in a red bag, but it's not the red bag, that's this one. It's, you know, rather than trying to describe that, it makes it all just one thing you can do to make it a little bit easier.
Yeah, and that's where snacks and things like that, if you know, your labour is going on a long time, you might need just a bit of a boost. So things that you like to eat that are handy to eat would be handy to have.
I always say, you know, nothing exciting, nothing exotic. So that might be a granola bar. It might be oatcakes with nut butter on them. Something that's going to give you more sustained energy, but nothing that's, you know, you haven't tried before.
And then in terms of what's important to have for baby, before they come into the world, what would you say are the top, say, five items?
Gosh, I'm so minimal. I wouldn't even get to five. And actually last time too, I feel like I was very much, you know, something for them to wear. So at the moment you're thinking your vest and your baby grow.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be anything fancy. You know, I honestly didn't even don't dress my kids in, you know, little dungarees or anything sweet like that, because they end up spitting up on them or having a poo up their back and you end up taking them off. So even just for photo opportunity, but certainly not for their first outfits. So something for them to wear. I say pack five of everything. So five vests, five onesies, five pairs of knickers for you. And the reason five is because you go through them. And if, you know, the longest duration that you would generally be in hospital for would be after cesarean birth, since it is major abdominal surgery, you have to recover from that.
Yeah.
So you're packing enough so that if that were to be the eventuality for your birth, you have enough to keep you going. Honestly, that's kind of everything. Maybe a few muslins. And it's also nice to have your own blanket. The hospital blankets are not, you know, as sort of sweet and lovely for pictures, but they're also not quite as soft. So you're thinking basic cellular blanket in case the blanket were to go up over baby. You should always keep the blanket at sort of chest height, nipple height for them. But if it were to go over their face with a cellular blanket, it's got little holes so they can always breathe through. They've actually changed the research regarding hats. So babies don't necessarily need hats after delivery anymore.
Interesting. I was just about to ask you about the hat. Okay.
They do say for if you end up having cesarean birth, because the operation room is, or the theatre rather, is always that bit colder. Just to allow some air to circulate. So, but the labour ward actually is really, really warm. So, you know, it's not necessary for you to have a hat, but you want to make sure that the car seat is installed, and you want to make sure that your baby's got something to go over them for going home. So whether that's a snowsuit if it's winter, or an extra blanket if it's summer, and a hat then for outside only.
Yeah. Yeah, brilliant. And then, like, in terms of buggies and all the rest of the stuff you can get afterwards, obviously a crib by the bed, whatever you decide on yourself, or things like that are important. But, you know, I certainly found that the buggy could have waited. We didn't. We had it in advance, but we ended up using the baby carrier, like the sling, in those early days, more so.
They want to be on you anyway, don't they?
Of course.
And if you're lucky enough to get a baby who will lie down quite happily in the buggy, awesome.
But there are
Send me the magic.
Exactly. Something else that can happen in the third trimester is often the baby shower or a mother blessing or blessings way, whatever one you decide on. There's lots of different ways of celebrating this very important time in a woman's life when she's about to become a mother for the first time, particularly.
Yeah. So I've experienced both.
Okay.
I last time had a surprise baby shower, which was, you know, typical in terms of all the things that you might see on Instagram. It was the little banner and the blue balloons. And we found out what we were having last time. We had a surprise baby this time. It was, you know, sort of the sash and the cute cupcakes and so sweet and such a lovely surprise. And one of my, you know, best friends came over from England for it, and it was so, you know, in a hotel, and it was just everything I wanted. And I got a lovely massage that was gifted to me by my friends, and we really took the time to just sit and chat and go, oh my gosh, this is so exciting. So I was one of the first in my group of friends to have a baby. So it was just, oh my goodness, here we go. This is just this new, you know, we're all entering into this new phase of life together now. And then this time round, one of my beautiful friends created a mother's blessing for me. And oh my goodness, I bawled, honestly. It was the most heart-opening, just, I'm still in awe. You know, I have pictures from it, and I must actually get my friend Paige to write a blog post or something for me, because she created this time and this space. And it was, you know, it was during COVID time, so it's always going to look a little bit different, right? We weren't going to do a big fancy schmancy thing. It was me and my closest friends, and we sat in a circle, and we read stories, and we lit candles, and we talked about, you know, that transition to becoming a mother again and how our lives were going to look, and gave space to each other to sort of talk about how our mothering was and what we wanted to carry forward and how they could support me, and how, you know, it was just honestly so wonderful.
For people listening who are going, What is this?
I've no
never
context.
Heard this
oh,
before.
Jesus.
Not at all. So, my awareness of a mother's blessing is that it's a Native American tradition that has been very much embraced by the West, but its roots are into ancient kind of traditions, and it's about kind of does what it says in the tin. It's about honoring the woman who is about to become a mother.
Yes, and focuses more on the mum as opposed to the new baby.
Yes, which the baby shower is probably more, it's fun, it's frivolous, it's cutesy, it's fun games, it's about the baby. Yeah, of course, the sharing about the mother, but it's essentially about this little new addition coming into your life, which is gorgeous and has its place. But mother's blessing is probably rooted more in spirituality, connection, empowerment. Yeah. Women coming together, supporting each other. And my awareness of it is that it's a very powerful thing to do. So I'm delighted that you had that.
Oh, I really hope you have it too. I'd love to set one up for you. It was very much so what you said. And I think the process of just sitting in a circle with your women and just going, wow, let's go, let's do this. And how can we support you? And, you know, without blabbing on about postpartum, because I know this is about birth prep, those women, you know, carried on from that circle to support me postpartum in the most beautiful way and, you know, rallied around me. We didn't have to cook for like the first 2 or 3 weeks of postpartum because I had a hot meal every day.
Oh, brilliant.
And I had women doing skin to skin with my baby so that I could eat, or feeding me, giving me an opportunity to have a poo on my own every day, which is bliss for a new mother, just so you know. And shower, you know, the postpartum sweats are very real. So having an opportunity where someone who I loved and trusted would be with my children so that I could shower. Yeah. Oh, what a gift.
Fabulous. It sounds like you've a wonderful circle of like-minded women with you. Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's great. So for those interested, you can Google it and you might get a bit of inspiration, but it can include things like Some people like to do, I believe, there can be a meditation. There might be a bit of sharing. There might be affirmations. There, you know, there you can do a lot of things that are ceremonial, like a crown of flowers. There can be a painting of bump.
Yes.
Lots of beautiful things that can be done that can be fun and playful. And for some people, it might be a bit out there. They might feel like it's too hippy dippy for them. But I think anything that will empower the woman to feel like the goddess that she is when she's pregnant and that she's able to do this and have that support from like-minded women, I think that I can imagine that that will really bear fruit when you're in labor, knowing that you have the circle of women around
you. Oh, you know my favorite
you.
Part? And even if you just do this, we shared a piece of red cord, which we helped to tie around each other's either ankles or wrists. And when I, you know, my labor began, the everyone was thinking of me, you know, everyone was there with me. So I could just focus on this and go, I'm not alone. And then when the baby was born, we all ripped off our cords and went, yes, I'm not alone. I'm not alone.
And there are
thousands and thousands of women around the world doing this with me.
It's wonderful, isn't it? And especially over the past year and a half, when there's been such a physical disconnect for women going through pregnancies, going through labour, knowing that while, you know, your pal, your sister, your mother, whoever it is, may not be in the room with you while you're giving birth, you're connected. And that sounds like such a powerful ritual to have experienced together. So.
Yeah.
Great. You've certainly given me a lot of ideas.
Good.
The whole way through this conversation, to be honest. So I'm so grateful to you. It's
if
brilliant.
Anyone is looking for more information without doing I am doing a shameless self plug.
Go for it.
I very openly and honestly shared both my birth prep experience and my postpartum experience on my Instagram. So I literally sat and talked through the messiness of it all. So if you were looking to prepare for your birth, prepare for your postpartum, and you're looking for a few ideas that are free, cheap and easy to access, just go and have a little look.
Great. Kitty, thank you so much. I think you really did touch on a huge amount in this conversation. There's always going to be more that afterwards we'll say we didn't say this.
Yeah, the list forgot. Oh, no!
I even have stuff on my phone here saying like the symptoms I had last time. Like broken sleep, crazy dreams, sensitive, ultra emotional. I had restless legs. I used to use a cooling gel and compression socks for that. I had a lot of swelling in the latter part of my pregnancy last time around. Just huge water retention. Carpal tunnel syndrome was something else I had last time. Don't have it this time.
Isn't
for some
so
reason.
Interesting.
Really interesting how different the pregnancies can be. So look, there are loads of other things we could have covered, and you have to just trust yourself and trust that you can do this, because you can. The fact that you're pregnant means your body can do this.
Yes.
And when it comes to birthing your baby, it knows how to do it.
It's already done the hard part.
Yes,
it's already,
absolutely.
You know, built to the kidneys and done, you know, all the fancy stuff. Pushing a baby out, just one muscle surging and releasing.
Love it. And as you said, sometimes it's the unlearning of what we think we know is what we need to do, and get out of our own way. Just take that step aside and go, I got this. Yep. And you do.
Absolutely.
And you do. And your baby will arrive.
It sure will.
However he or she or they are meant to, they will arrive. And it is the most amazing experience. And I suppose really, I think I probably speak for both of us, is anyone who is passionate about speaking about pregnancy and birth would only ever want a woman to feel empowered so that you can really feel at ease with the experience, however it comes to pass. However.
Whatever way it looks.
Yeah, whatever way it looks. Kitty, thank you.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Next week, my pregnancy mini-series continues as we discuss all things labour and childbirth. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real Conversations.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here.
I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.